We're going to be starting this Bible study today on the book of Leviticus chapter 6, verse number 8 through chapter 7. This is a new set of instructions from God to give to Moses and to the children of Israel. And he's still speaking on the first day that his presence entered the tabernacle. Notice that it starts in verse number 8 of chapter 6 and goes all the way through chapter 7. This is a new set of instructions, and it should have had, in my opinion, its own chapter, but this is the way that the King James translators set this up. So it's a new set of instructions, but it actually starts in verse number 8 of chapter 6. Now, as we usually do, we'll do a review from the last couple of Bible studies, talk about God's instructions so far. And during the last couple of Bible studies, we talked about the five types of sacrifice that God ordained for the children of Israel to give offerings in sacrifice to Him. We talked about the first three types of sacrifice in these first three chapters. Chapter 1 was the burnt offering, which was the most common offering. It was an offering that was given in the morning and the evening, on the Sabbath and holy days. And it was the offering that was completely burnt. Completely burnt. Just going through these to kind of remind you of what we talked about. The second type of sacrifice was the grain offering in chapter 2. This was a tribute offering to God, in which this is going to pertain probably mostly when they get into the land of Canaan, the promised land, when they begin to harvest their grain. And when they would give this offering as a sacrifice, a memorial portion of it was burnt on the altar. The rest of it went to the priests. The priest could eat the rest of the grain. So if an Israelite brought in a bushel of grain for his offering in this particular sacrifice, the priest would take one handful, burn it on the altar, memorial portion to God. The rest of that bushel would go to the priest for them to eat. The third type of sacrifice was the peace offering, which is covered in chapter 3. This was a sacrifice symbolic of peace and fellowship with God. A thanksgiving type of offering where you're thankful for what God has given, so you give back to Him. It was a time of rejoicing because God's presence was near. He was with the children of Israel in the tabernacle. And this particular offering and the peace offering, some of it was burnt on the altar. Some of it was given to the priests, meat for them to eat. The rest went to the worshiper. So the Israelite that brought in this particular offering to be sacrificed, he actually could invite his family together and they'd have a worship meal together. The fourth type of sacrifice was covered in chapter 4 through verse 13 of chapter 5, the sin offering. That's the way the King James translators put it in our versions, is the sin offering. But a better way to put this would be a purification offering, because the temple precinct and the holy place had to be purified by blood. This was a required offering, whereas the first three, the burnt offering, the grain offering, the peace offering, they were voluntary gift offerings. This was a required offering. As I mentioned, it was also called the purification offering because it purifies the place of worship by blood. We also talked about the fact that there was different classes in this particular offering. Started with the priest who represented all the people, and then it went down all the way to the common people. And with the priest and anything that the priest was involved with, the blood had to be taken into the holy place, sprinkled seven times towards the veil, and then around the altar of incense. Whereas with the common person, the common Israelite or leader, the blood was placed around the altar of sacrifice in the courtyard. This deals with unintentional sins, not with intent to be disobedient. Not where a person was deliberately wanting to be disobedient. But just like all of us, we're human beings and we sin. But we break down. It's not because we're intentionally sinning, but we do sin. Chapter 5 discusses the fifth type of offering. Chapter 5, verse 13, actually, through chapter 6, verse number 7. And that was the trespass offering. Again, that's the King James way of putting it. A better way is the reparation offering. Reparation or restitution had to be made. Restitution was made for trespass against sacred objects. In other words, if somebody shorted bringing in their tithes, restitution had to be made, plus 20%. Or a breach against a neighbor. If you gave false testimony or extorted your neighbor, restitution had to be made. A key verse dealing with all these five types of sacrifice is Leviticus chapter 17, verse number 11, where it says, "For the life of the flesh is in the blood." We all have our life from the blood. And God says, "I have given it to you upon the altar to make atonement for your souls." A sacrifice is made on the altar to make atonement for us. And then finally, the last part of verse 11, "For it is the blood that makes atonement for the soul." And the way they did it in Old Testament times was they sacrificed an animal, shed blood to make atonement, to cover the sins of those that sinned. This points to the ultimate sacrifice of Jesus Christ and his shed blood to cover our sins, an atonement for all of us. So that's a review of what we've covered last time, and I know that I've covered this before, but I want to make sure that we have a good understanding of this. If you understand just a little bit about each of these five types of sacrifice, when you go throughout the rest of the book of Leviticus or Numbers or Deuteronomy or anywhere in the Old Testament that talks about any of these sacrifices, then you understand what is going on. So it's good to learn a little bit about each one of these sacrifices. Okay, now as a way of introduction to this Bible study today, and again we're going to be covering from chapter 6, verse number 8, all the way through chapter 7. This is a new set of instructions from God. My opinion, this should have had its own chapter, but our King James translators didn't do it that way. This is directions for the priests. The priests. Now, let me just say that the priests aren't ordained yet. That's actually going to happen in chapter 8. Right now, chapters 1 through 7 is all instructions from God. One long speech from God the day that his presence entered the tabernacle to give to Moses and the children of Israel. So the ordination of the priests is going to take place in our next Bible study, the next chapter. The directions for the priests is in this section of Scripture. And it summarizes the five sacrifices, but it has additional information about them. The five types of sacrifice prescribed in the first five chapters are taken up again, but with added regulations. And it's directed towards the priests. Now, the purpose of chapter 6, verse 8 through all of chapter 7, is to show how the sacrifices are to be divided. The portions that are to be eaten. Now consider this for a moment. When the sacrificial system began, once the priests are ordained and they begin to make these sacrifices, there's going to be sacrifices going on all day. The morning and the evening sacrifice, plus the worshipers bringing in their animals to be sacrificed. There was a lot of meat involved, and directions had to be given by God on who gets to eat what. Otherwise, it had been mass confusion. So even though it seems complicated, God put everything in order and regulated on who gets to eat what. So it shows how the sacrifices are to be divided and how they're to be disposed of following the altar ritual in a very organized way. Tyndale commentary adds this: "The remainder of chapter 6 and the whole of chapter 7 form a distinct unit in the Hebrew text." So in the Hebrew text, it's got its own unit, own chapter, you could say. And it comprises a manual of sacrificial procedure, notice, addressed to the priesthood. So this section is for the priests to understand so that they can do things in the right and organized manner. So let's begin now, and we'll pick it up in chapter 6, verse number 8. This is a new set of instructions from God. And in the first area, verses 8 through 13, will be additional instructions concerning the burnt offering, which is the first type of sacrifice. Verse number 8, where we start today. And let me, before we begin there, notice at the bottom of the screen we have the altar of burnt sacrifice. As I've showed you this before and we've talked about this, this was the first thing that you saw when you came into the courtyard, was this altar where the sacrifices took place. This signifies, this altar signifies that the way of approach to God is through sacrifice. The way to approach God is through sacrifice. For the children of Israel, in the ancient times, it was the sacrifice of the animal. For us, our way of approach to God is through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. His shed blood has broken down that barrier so that we can have access to God. Again, sacrifice is the way of access to God, approach to God. Okay, verse number 8. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, now, I don't know how many of you are reading in the Old King James. This is written in the New King James. But in the Old King James, instead of the word spoke, it says spake. And that's Old King James language from the 1600s. And you actually see that word spake in the Old King James something like 35 times in the book of Leviticus. And every time you see that, that signifies a new set of instructions from God. Verse number 8, here's the instructions. God says, command Aaron and his sons. So we know who this is going to. Aaron and his sons will be the priests. Command Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the law of the burnt offering. The burnt offering shall be on the hearth upon the altar all night until morning, and the fire of the altar shall be kept burning on it. Now going back to chapter 1, the initial instructions about the burnt offering, the only thing that God had told in chapter 1 was that the priest should put fire on the altar, to put the fire on the altar. Now he's giving additional instructions that the fire should be kept burning on the altar. Verse number 9, we see this phrase, command Aaron and his sons, who would become the priests. And the Jewish Study Bible Tanakh adds this, because handling the flesh of the burnt offering is their task. That's what they would be doing. We also see this phrase, the fire shall be kept burning on it. The fire on the altar of sacrifice, was to burn continually. Now, it's not explained in this section of Scripture, nor in Leviticus, exactly why it should be kept burning. But we can come up with much symbolism can be drawn from what the continual presence of the eternal flame, what that signifies. And many of the commentators bring this up, and we'll talk about this as we go along. So we see here in the last part of verse number 8 that says, the fire of the altar shall be kept burning on it. Now a question comes up, how was the fire kept burning on the altar all the time? The Nelson Study Bible has a good comment about this. It says this, the fire on the altar was never to go out. This was accomplished at night with a burnt offering that was not extinguished. It could have been stoked with wood through the night to keep it burning. So the priest that was in charge of the evening sacrifice, the evening burnt offering, because there had to be one in the morning and one at the evening, the one that would make that sacrifice in the evening, he was in charge of making sure the fire kept burning during the night. In other words, he had to keep throwing logs on the fire to keep it going. Continuing on, after being renewed in the morning, we'll get to that, to verse 12, the fire was kept going through the day for the succession of the various offerings. So the priest at night had to make sure the fire was going. Then the priest that would do the morning sacrifice had to keep the fire going as well. Then the sacrifices would continue on throughout the day. The phrase, the fire shall be kept burning. Here's a good comment from the Jewish Study Bible Tanakh. It says this, It serves as a perpetual sign that God is being worshipped constantly. That's one of the symbolisms of this fire that keeps burning, that God is being worshipped constantly. And you know, we can apply that to us in what we could call the New Testament times, our day and times in the church, that we should keep the fire burning of the Holy Spirit to keep God, to keep worshiping God constantly as well. Continuing on, verse number 10, more instructions from God to the priesthood. Verse 10, and the priest shall put on his linen garment. Now let me stop there for a moment. This is not that beautiful robe of the high priest. Now, if you remember back in Exodus, when we went through that section of scripture, that I showed pictures of the robe of the high priest, very beautiful and elegant, all the different colors, and it had the robe and the tunic, the breastplate, the ephod, all of that. This isn't talking about the high priest garment. This is for all the rest of the priests, the linen garment that they would wear. Continuing on, and his linen trousers he shall put on his body. That's talking about what we would call underwear. So the priests had to have their linen garment on, and they had to have an underwear. Remember, we talked about this back in the book of Exodus as well. The pagan priests didn't wear anything under their robes. And when they would go up the steps to their altar in their pagan service, you could see everything as they went up the steps. God, of course, would not have anything to do with that, so his priests are to have undergarments on. So the priest shall have on his linen garment, linen trousers he shall put on his body, and take up the ashes of the burnt offering which the fire has consumed on the altar, and he shall put them beside the altar. So that altar of burnt sacrifice, I showed you the picture here a few moments ago, there would be ashes after the sacrifice. He would take those ashes out. There was actually they had a pit formed an area beside the altar where they would dump the ashes into. Verse number 11. Then he shall take off his garments, put on other garments, which I would call work clothes, and carry the ashes outside the camp to a clean place. So after he takes the ashes out of the altar, he gathers them up, puts on other clothes, work clothes, and carries the ashes outside the camp. Verse number 10, we see the linen garment. That was a tunic or a robe, a fine linen with a belt, a sash, around the waist. And then linen trousers, as I mentioned earlier, were undergarments from the waist to the thigh. If you recall the scripture back in Exodus chapter 28, verse number 40, God in his instructions about the priesthood, he said, for Aaron's sons, you shall make tunics, and you shall make sashes for them. So the tunics that God described back in Exodus 28 is this linen garment. Not the beautiful robe of the high priest, but these were the garments of the regular priests. And of course, the sashes was a belt. Expositor's commentary adds this about verse 10. It says, this linen was doubtless some of the precious material the Israelite women had brought with them from Egypt. Amongst the spoils of Egypt, when they left, you know, they spoiled the Egyptians. Gold, silver, all kinds of fine jewelry, etc. The women also spoiled much linen that they could now use in making these tunics. In verse number 11, the phrase for the priest to carry the ashes outside the camp, expositors add to this, for disposing ashes outside the camp, ordinary clothes were to be worn. What I would call work clothes, because you're carrying those ashes out and dumping them outside the camp. Verse number 12. And the fire on the altar. This reflects back to verse number 9, what we previously read. The fire on the altar shall be kept burning on it, and it shall not be put out. And the priest shall burn wood on it every morning, and lay the burnt offering in order on it, and he shall burn on it the fat of the peace offerings. The fat of the peace, the fat, as we've talked about, was dedicated to God. The best part of it is the way that they looked at it. Verse 13, and a fire shall always be burning on the altar. It shall never go out. That was God's instructions, and it was the priest's responsibility to make sure that fire would continue on. Verse number 12, we've talked about this before. Expositors, here's a good comment. The sacrifices required not a little work. There was a lot of work involved with these sacrifices. You know, gathering up the animal, slitting the throat, cutting the different parts, you know, gathering the wood. There was a lot involved with this. Continuing on, wood must be secured and cut. A good bit of wood was needed to get the roaring fire that would burn the sacrifices completely. And as we've talked about already, it was a continual fire. Here's a good comment from Tyndale Commentary about some of the symbolism of this continual fire. It says this, an eternal flame can be amenable to a great deal of symbolism. For the ancient Hebrews, it typified, among other things, number one, God's presence among his people, and God was with them, and his own demands that his covenant nation should worship him alone. That was part of the symbolism of this perpetual fire to keep burning, is that God's presence would be among him, among the people, and that they should worship him alone, not the pagan gods of the nations around him. So this could change. This could change. This fire could, perpetual fire could change because of disobedience. In fact, as we fast forward in the history of Israel, we come to the times of Israel and Judah when they disobeyed God and got into extreme paganism. So bad that, you know, Israel, northern tribes, was carried away by the Assyrians. And then in 585 BC, God sent the Babylonians against the tribe of Judah, burnt Jerusalem and the temple to the ground. And when this happened, God's presence abandoned the temple because of disobedience. And the sacrifices were affected because of that. So this continual fire had symbolism, God's presence, but that the nation should worship him alone. Now, sometimes a question comes up about the section of scripture in Exodus 35 where it's prohibited fires being built on the Sabbath day. How did that affect these offerings? Well, it didn't. Here's a good comment from Tyndale. It says this, Sabbath prohibitions regarding the kindling of fires did not apply to the tabernacle. What we read back in Exodus chapter 35, verse number 3, was that they were not to build fires in the construction of the tabernacle. You know, they were not to do the industrial smelting fires where they would melt down the silver and the gold to make all the different furnitures, etc. But with this, these were sacrificial fires of worship to God. So fires could be built and maintained on the Sabbath day. Of course, work had to be done to do that. Similar to my job today as a minister, I have to do my job on the Sabbath day in our worship service to worship God. So the sacrificial fires were part of the worship service, and there was a burnt offering done on the Sabbath day. Now let's take a look at verses 12 and 13 again about this fire. As we already read previously, it says in verse 13, a fire shall always be burning on the altar. It shall never go out. Now, we've talked a little bit about the symbolism. The Gnostic Study Bible adds a little bit more about the symbolism of this ever-burning fire. It says this, five times in this paragraph, the priests are instructed to keep the fire burning. There are at least three reasons for this. Number one, the original fire on the altar came from God. We'll talk about that in the next Bible study. When the priests are actually ordained and they begin to do the sacrifices, God is actually going to send that fire to consume the first sacrifice. Another symbolism is perpetual fire symbolized the perpetual worship of God. And number three, perpetual fire symbolized the continual need for atonement and reconciliation with God, which was the purpose of the offerings. Just as we need continual atonement and reconciliation with God, they had to have that in the ancient times as well. So in verse 13, it says, the fire shall never go out. Here's another good comment from Kiel and Delitzsch commentary. It says this, fire was to be kept constantly burning on the altar without going out. Not in order that the heavenly fire might never be extinguished, but that the burnt offering might never go out. Because this was the divinely appointed symbol and visible sign of the uninterrupted worship of Jehovah. And as I mentioned earlier, in Israel's history, they would go into paganism and the worship of God would come to an end because they fell into paganism and the temple would be destroyed and the sacrifices affected because of that. Now, another question that comes up from time to time is, how did Israel keep the fire burning when they were in the desert? While they were wandering in the desert, how did they keep that fire going? Well, there's not a lot of description in the Pentateuch about that, but there is one in Numbers chapter 4, verses 13 through 14. This discusses the altar of burnt offering in the courtyard. And verse 13 and 14 talk about when the altar was transported while they were on the move in the desert. Here's what it says, verse 13. Also, they shall take away the ashes from the altar and spread a purple cloth over it. So when they were ready to move, they would take a special pan and take out the ashes, the burning ashes out of there, and put a purple cloth over it to guard the fire to keep going, or the coals. Verse 14, they shall put on it, talking about the altar, all its implements with which they minister there, the fire pans, the forks, the shovels, the basins, and the utensils of the altar, and they shall spread on it a covering of badger skins that were leather skins, and insert its poles. So they had poles that they put into the altar. Everything related to it was piled on the top of it, including this special pan that had these burning coals in it. That's how they kept it going as they traveled. Jameson Fawcett Brown adds this. No mention is made of the sacred fire, but as of divine command, it was to be kept constantly burning. It must have been transferred to some pan or brazier under the covering and borne by the appropriate carriers. So that's how they did it, this special pan with a covering over it. And the priests were responsible for keeping that fire going. And we'll talk about that more when we get to the book of Numbers. Okay, now we'll continue on with the instructions from God on this first day that his presence entered the tabernacle. This set of instructions is talking about the grain offering, the second type of sacrifice, and there's going to be more instructions for the priests. Again, a lot of this would pertain to when they actually come into the promised land and begin to harvest their grains. Verse 14, this is the law of the grain offering. The sons of Aaron, the priests, shall offer it on the altar before the Lord in the tabernacle precinct. Verse 15, he shall take from it his handful of the fine flour of the grain offering with its oil, the frankincense which is on the grain offering, and shall burn it on the altar for a sweet aroma as a memorial to the Lord. Again, that handful they'd take out of that basket or whatever and burn it on the altar to be accepted by God. Verse 16, and the remainder of it Aaron and his sons shall eat. Now, especially when they get into the land and as they were traveling along, Aaron and his son, and the priests, they didn't have any way of making their living. So they had to be taken care of. This was one of those ways. The remainder of the grain offering went to them to eat. Continuing on, with unleavened bread it shall be eaten in a holy place. In other words, within the tabernacle precinct. In the court of the tabernacle of meeting, they shall eat it. Verse 17, it shall not be baked with leaven. We know the symbolism of what leaven signifies. I have given it as their portion of my offerings made by fire. It is most holy, like the sin offering and the trespass offering. We see that, Usually Lydia lets me know when I don't click that forward. Okay, where did I leave off here now? Okay, verse 17, we were talking about it should not be baked with leaven. It says here, and you see this phrase quite a bit in Leviticus, it is most holy. And what that means is it belongs to the priests. And in this case, that they're going to eat of this particular offering. Verse number 18, all the males among the children of Israel may eat it. Children of Aaron, I'm sorry, may eat it. That's the priests. It shall be a statute forever in your generations concerning the offerings made by fire to the Lord. Then God adds this, everyone who touches them, you know, these offerings, must be holy. Talking about the priests. And we'll talk about that more as we get into more of the book of Leviticus. Okay, we see in verse number 18 that all the males among the children of Aaron, the priests, may eat it. Here's a comment from the Jewish Study Bible. It says this, the priest portion of the most holy offerings may be eaten only by priests qualified to offer them, namely males. But what about the women? Last part of this. Female members of the priestly families are permitted to eat of the well-being peace sacrifices. So of this grain offering, this is just for the male priesthood. But in the peace offering, that one that is a Thanksgiving offering where all the family can be invited, that's where the women can eat of the sacrifice, the meat. So these are God's instructions again. And again, when you consider that this is going to be an ongoing process, a lot of meat, a lot of grain coming in, God giving specific instructions on who gets what. And that's why it's so detailed here. Now verses 19 through 23, this is additional material concerning the grain offering given by the priests themselves. So the other one was where a worshiper brings in an offering and it's taken care of. This one is for the priests themselves, or by the priests themselves. It's a daily cereal offering for the high priest and the priesthood. This was not mentioned in chapter 2. This was an absolute required offering of the priests. And this would go on for centuries that the priesthood would do this daily grain offering on behalf of themselves. Hebrews chapter 7, verse 27 mentions about this daily offering. It was this cereal offering. Verse number 19. The Lord spoke to Moses, again from the old King James, it spake, a new set of instructions. Verse 20. This is the offering of Aaron and his sons, which they shall offer to the Lord. The priesthood, in other words. Now notice this. Beginning on the day when he is anointed. That hasn't happened yet. These are just the instructions God is giving. The actual anointing of the priests when they're officially inaugurated to be priests, to be ministers, what is going to happen in chapter 8. We'll cover that in the next Bible study. So, they shall offer this to the Lord beginning on the day when he is anointed, 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour, as a daily grain offering. Half of it in the morning and half of it at night. This would continue on. Once they officially get consecrated as priests, begin their sacrifices, they have to do this every day, this particular daily cereal offering. We see this phrase here, on the day when he is anointed. New International Commentary in the Old Testament says, this indicates the point at which the sacrifice started to be offered on a daily basis as a regular cereal offering. And we haven't got there yet. That's going to take place in chapter 8 when they actually get, chapter 8 and chapter 9 when they actually become priests and then begin the sacrifices. Verse 21, it shall be made in a pan with oil. When it is mixed, you shall bring it in. The baked pieces of the grain offering you shall offer for a sweet aroma to the Lord. Sweet aroma to the Lord means to be accepted by God. Going back to the time of Noah, after the flood, he came out and first thing he did was a burnt offering. And it was a sweet aroma to the Lord, accepted by God. That's what that phrase means. Verse 22. The priest from among his sons who is anointed in his place shall offer it. It's a statue forever to the Lord. It shall be wholly burned. Verse 23, for every grain offering for the priest shall be wholly burned. It shall not be eaten. So this is different from that cereal offering that the worshiper would bring in, say his bushel basket, and the priest could have the rest of that. With this daily cereal offering for the priest, he could not eat it. So it's new instructions. Expositors adds this. This offering differs from the usual cereal offering, in that it was to be entirely burnt. Verse 23. It was given every morning and was to accompany the burnt offering and the fellowship offerings. So again, the priest did not eat this daily cereal offering. Now we come to another section for the priests. Verses 24 through 30, the sin offering, the fourth type of sacrifice. And God is going to emphasize in these instructions the holiness of this particular offering and also who gets to eat it. Who gets to eat what? Verse 24. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron and his sons, the priests, saying, this is the law of the sin offering. In the place where the burnt offering is killed, the north side of the altar, the sin offering shall be killed before the Lord. And notice the last part of verse 25. It is most holy. So God is saying that the meat from this is for the priests. Now, if you remember back from the last Bible study, and I know this is a lot of material, but in the sin offering, which we also call the purification offering, if it was for the priests to cover his sins, he had to take the blood into the holy place, sprinkle it seven times towards the veil, and then around the altar of incense. That meat wasn't eaten. He poured the rest of the blood by the altar of sacrifice, and then the rest of it was taken outside the camp and burnt. So this is saying that the priest can eat this one. So this particular sacrifice was for the common Israelite when he brought in his sin offering. So it's most holy, the priest can eat it. Verse 26 clarifies it. The priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. So this was an animal that was brought in by a common Israelite to cover his sin. So the priest can eat it. In a holy place, the tabernacle precinct, it shall be eaten in the court of the tabernacle of meeting. Verse 27, God adds this. Everyone who touches its flesh, the flesh of the sacrifice, must be holy, the priest. And when its blood is sprinkled on any garment, you shall wash that on which it was sprinkled in a holy place. So in other words, if some of the drippings of the blood got on a garment, it had to be washed. And why is that? Because the blood of that sacrifice symbolized covering the sin. And so it had symbolism in it, and it had to be washed. Let's take a look at this comment here. From verse 26, we see the phrase, the priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. So we know going from back to chapter 4 that his own sin offering, the priest, could not be eaten. So this was for a common Israelite, a common person. The Nelson Study Bible adds this. The priest was not guilty of sin in this case, so he was entitled to the meat from the sacrificial animal. And we see in verse 27 this phrase, everyone who touches its flesh must be holy. Talking about the animal's flesh. New Bible commentary. Anything or anyone that came in contact with what was holy was affected by it and needed to be treated accordingly. It brought the person into a proximity with which God, into a proximity with God, which could be dangerous. And so such things had to be washed or destroyed. So this is talking about, you know, the sacredness of all of these sacrifices. To put it down to what we do today, when we observe the Passover ceremony, it's our most sacred time of the year when we observe the Passover. When we take that little bit of wine and a little bit of bread It has very much symbolism and importance to us. But then there's leftovers of the wine and the bread that have to be treated in a certain way. And so that's what this is talking about as well. Very sacred, all of these acts. Now we come to verse number 28. I mentioned to you several times now, there was a lot of meat left over when these sacrifices, or there was a lot of meat involved with these sacrifices. Sometimes there was more than could be eaten. So what did they do? Well, there was leftovers, and it could be cooked. Here's God's instructions about that. You know, when we have a barbecue, you know, sometimes you know what I'm talking about on Thanksgiving. Sometimes you have so much, you eat for days. Of course, we have refrigerators where we can keep it good and everything. Here's God's instructions. Verse 28. But the earthen vessel in which it is boiled, talking about the meat, shall be broken. Okay? Here's something else you might not have realized from the ancient times. Most of the people in the ancient world boiled their meat. Boiled their meat when they cooked it. So here we're talking about after the sacrifice has been done and they're going to boil the meat, reheat it, in other words. That when they're preparing or cooking the meat, it shall be broken. Continuing on, and if it is boiled in a bronze pot, it shall be both scoured and rinsed with water. And why did they have to do this? Because it come in contact with the sacrificial meat from the offering. So they had to wash these things or break them afterwards. Verse number 29. All the males among the priests may eat it. It is most holy. So this meat is for the priest to eat. Let me stop and add a little something again. I already made this comment earlier, but talking about the vessel that's broken and the bronze pot that's scoured and rinsed in water because it came in contact with the sacrificial offering. When we get done with the Passover service, you know, if there's wine left over in some of the vials, we don't pour it back into the bottle. Nor do we take up the bread and put it back into the box. It has to be disposed of properly because it represented the sacrifice of Jesus Christ and the symbolism of it. So that relates to what we're talking about here with the pots that have to be scoured or broken. Continuing on, verse number 30. Reemphasizing, God says, but no sin offering from which any of the blood is brought into the tabernacle of meeting to make atonement in the holy place shall be eaten. It shall be burned in the fire. So, he's reminding in these instructions that if this had to do with the priest, covering his sin offering, where if the blood is brought into the holy place, you can't eat that meat. Only for the common Israelite can it be eaten. Here's a comment from Understanding the Bible Commentary Series regarding verse 28. It says, if the offering, talking about the meat from the offering, if the offering is prepared in a clay pot, the pot is broken. The contagion, talking about what it represents, could be absorbed in the clay. Apparently clay pots to replace broken ones were also readily available. If it's cooked in a bronze pot, the pot is to be scoured and rinsed with water. In verse number 30, expositors, offerings whose blood was not taken into the tabernacle could be eaten by the officiating priest, but by him and the males of his family. It was to be eaten in the sacred precincts, and the vessels it was cooked in were to be broken or scoured. Verse number 28. And expositors adds this. It was apparently the most solemn sacrifice of Israel and thus was especially fitting type of Christ's atoning death. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse number 12. That ends chapter 6. Now we come to chapter 7 and we'll be discussing the fifth type of sacrifice, the trespass offering. Verses 1 through 10. The trespass offering is described as a most holy sacrifice. It's for the priesthood and was restricted for them to eat. Now directions were given about the Lord's portion, the fatty portions. Remember, we've talked about the fact that the fat was burned to God, represented the best, like what we would call, we use the expression, the fat of the land, to mean the best. And the fat was burned to God. Verse number 1. Likewise, this is the law of the trespass offering. It is most holy. In other words, for the priests. Verse 2. In the place where they kill the burnt offering, they shall kill the trespass offering. And its blood he shall sprinkle all around the altar. Talking about the altar of sacrifice, that altar you saw when you came into the courtyard. Word commentary. The ritual is virtually identical to that of the purification offering. The major difference is in handling the blood. It's sprinkled against all sides of the altar, the altar of sacrifice, while the blood of a purification offering is either sprinkled against the curtain of the holy place or smeared on the horns of the altar of incense or the main altar. Verse number 3, now we're going to be talking about the fat portions that are dedicated to God, the fat portions of the animal. Verse 3, and he shall offer from it all its fat, the fat tail and the fat that covers the entrails. Verse 4, the two kidneys and the fat that's on them by the flanks, and the fatty lobe attached to the liver above the kidneys he shall remove. So God gave specific instructions on which parts of the fat were to be dedicated to him. Verse 5, and the priest shall burn them, the fat, on the altar as an offering made by fire to the Lord. It is a trespass offering. So again, more instructions on what they were to do. Verse number 6, every male among the priests may eat it. It shall be eaten in a holy place. It is most holy. Males among the priests can eat it. It can only be eaten in the tabernacle precincts and for the priests only. Word commentary. The majority of the meat of this offering, which is not burned on the altar, is most holy. Therefore, it becomes the priests, but they must eat it in a holy place, in the tabernacle precinct. Verse number 7. The trespass offering is like the sin offering. There's one law for them both. The priest who makes atonement with it shall have it. Then we come to verse number 8, and God adds something that's not been talked about before. Verse number 8. And the priest who offers anyone's burnt offering, that priest shall have for himself the skin of the burnt offering which he has offered. So this hasn't been talked about previously with the burnt offering. On the burnt offering, that had to be completely burnt up. Except for the skin, God is saying now, that belongs to the priests. So they could use it as leather goods and however they would use it. Tyndale commentary. These instructions enunciated clearly the principle that those who minister at the altar shall share in the sacrificial offerings, in a reference to 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and 10, that the ministry should be taken care of. Verse number 9, and every grain offering that's baked in the oven and all that is prepared in the covered pan or in a pan shall be the priest who offers it. Every grain offering, verse 10, whether mixed with oil or dry, shall belong to all the sons of Aaron, to one as much as the other. So the officiating priests at each sacrifice had the rights to these portions. Now we come to the peace offering. This was the third type of sacrifice, and this is covered in verses 11 through 21. This is also called the fellowship or the thanksgiving offering, an offering of giving thanks to God. This section gives more details that were not found about the peace offering previously. Remember, this is the only offering which the common Israelite, the layman, were allowed to eat. And they could invite their family members to eat it as well. First of all, in these instructions, it's going to talk about the grain offering. Then it'll talk about the meat portions. Verse 11. This is the law of sacrifice of peace offerings, which he shall offer to the Lord. If he offers it for thanksgiving, then he shall offer with the sacrifice of thanksgiving, unleavened cakes mixed with oil, unleavened wafers anointed with oil, or cakes of blended flour mixed with oil. And this portion would be burnt on the altar, this memorial portion. So again, this is talking about a common Israelite who's bringing in something as a thanksgiving offering to God. Verse 13, in addition, beside the cakes, as his offering, he shall offer leavened bread with the sacrifice of thanksgiving of his peace offering. Now, no leavening was to touch the altar. So what this is talking about is just bringing bread along to eat in the meal. In the ancient times, bread was the main staple of what they ate. So God was saying in this Thanksgiving meal, with the meat that's involved, with the family, bring some bread along to eat as well as part of your offering. That's what verse 13 is talking about. Verse 14, and he shall offer from one cake from each offering as a heave offering to the Lord, a contribution to God, and it shall belong to the priest who sprinkles the blood of the peace offering. So in verse 12, we see three unleavened grain offerings. Bible Knowledge Commentary. Since the offerings were without yeast, the priest apparently offered a memorial portion on the altar, accompanying the fat of the animal of the fellowship offering. Verse 13, the leavened bread was the usual staple of food. In Bible Knowledge Commentary, was apparently for the communal meal rather than for the officiating priest. So they brought bread as part of this meal of thanksgiving that they'd eat together. Verse 14, or a comment from the New International Application Commentary about verse 14. After giving one of each kind of cake or wafer as a contribution, a terumah, that which was set apart to the Lord, to be utilized by the officiating priest, rather than burnt on the altar, the offerer can eat the rest. So again, there's a lot of detail here, but there was so much involved with this on a daily basis. Now they had definite, organized instructions. There wasn't chaos with all of this, and God had it organized for them all. Verse 15, the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offering for thanksgiving shall be eaten the same day it is offered. He shall not leave any of it until morning. So if you brought in a thanksgiving offering and you've got your family involved, that had to be eaten right away. Can't be left until the morning. But, verse 16, if the sacrifice of his offering is a vow or a voluntary offering, it shall be eaten the same day that he offers the sacrifice, but on the next day, the remainder of it may also be eaten. So this is a different, this isn't talking about the thanksgiving offering. This is a specific vow or a voluntary offering of some sort. And there's so much meat involved here that there's leftovers. God said with this kind of offering, you can eat it the next day if you've got leftovers. Verse 17, here's additional information. The remainder of the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day must be burned with fire. They didn't have ways of refrigeration and keeping things, and by the third day it already began to spoil. So God says, burn that up. Verse 18, and if any of the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offering is eaten at all on the third day, it shall not be accepted, nor shall it be imputed to him. It shall be an abomination to him who offers it, and the person who eats of it shall bear guilt. So, they could eat leftovers from the sacrifice of a vow or a voluntary offering, but not the third day. Bible Knowledge Commentary, verse 15. The portion of the meat of the fellowship offering of thanksgiving that was for the communal meal had to be eaten on the day of the offering. The participants in the communal meal were the worshiper and his family. Had to eat that one up on that day. But we see in verse 16 and 17, it talks about the same day and the next day and the third day. Again, the Bible Knowledge Commentary. In the case of a fellowship offering for a vow, or a free will offering, anything left over could be eaten on the next day. But any leftovers beyond the second day had to be burned up. And of course, that's talking about the third day. In the Bible Knowledge Commentary, to eat any meat on the third day disqualified the entire offering and made the violator subject to divine punishment, because at that time the meat had begun to spoil. So specific instructions from God regarding all of that meat that they would be dealing with. Now we're going to come to a section beginning in verse number 19 that talks about avoiding defilement. This is something when we get into the middle of the book of Leviticus that we're going to talk about quite a bit. Defilement and avoiding defilement. Contact with the unclean could make meat unclean. Okay, verse number 19. It says, the flesh, talking about the animal, that touches any unclean thing shall not be eaten. It shall be burned with fire. As for the clean flesh, all who are clean may eat of it. So, again, this is talking about defilement. It says in the first part of verse 19, the flesh, the animal flesh, that touches any unclean thing shall not be eaten. Now, what are we talking about? Talking about perhaps a person with a disease, or an unclean animal, or a bodily discharge. If any of this sacrificial meat would touch somebody who's got a disease, or let's say somebody who hadn't cleaned themselves after they went to the bathroom, or touched an unclean animal like a rat or a pig, etc., that flesh could not be eaten. That sacrificial meat. That's what this is saying. Verse number 20. But the person who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offering that belongs to the Lord, while he is unclean, that person shall be cut off from his people. So, the peace offering, this is the one where the family gets together and they're eating and they're giving thanks to God. They're eating this meal. Let's say a person's got a bad disease. God is saying, no, you can't eat in that Thanksgiving meal with them, or you're going to be cut off. That's what verse 20 is saying. Verse 21. Moreover, the person who touches any unclean thing, such as human uncleanness, so he can figure out what that is, an unclean animal, or any abominable unclean thing, and who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offering that belongs to the Lord, that person shall be cut off from his people. So God is making specific instructions here that anybody who has any kind of human uncleanness, a disease, has touched an unclean animal, you can't participate in that fellowship Thanksgiving offering and eat the meat. Bible Knowledge Commentary. The general rule for eating meat was that both the meat and its eater had to be ceremonially clean. Now we're going to talk about that more when we get into the middle part of the book of Leviticus. Ceremonially unclean. God's presence was in the tabernacle, and in, of course, the tabernacle precinct there was where the place of worship was. God's holy presence was there. Remember going back to the book of Exodus, where Moses approached God at the burning bush, and what did God say to him? Take off your shoes, because where you stand is holy ground. He was in God's presence, and he had to take off his shoes. Whenever anybody came into the courtyard, the place of worship, they had to be clean. What the commentators call ceremonially clean. You couldn't have a disease like leprosy, or have uncleanness on your body, or have touched an unclean animal to come into the place of worship. That's what, in general, this is talking about. And we'll get into more specifics later on. So, continuing on with what the Bible Knowledge Commentary says, in the middle it says, anyone ceremonially unclean who ate meat of the fellowship offering was to be cut off from his people. Bad news, in other words. Now, what does that mean, to be cut off from his people? Well, it isn't really spelled out in the scriptures what that means. Some commentators say it means death. Others say, no, it doesn't mean that. So that phrase, cut off from his people, is a disputed phrase. It does that mean death? Here's a comment from Word Commentary. It says this. The precise nature of the punishment prescribed by this language is no longer known. Hutton, he's a commentator, points out that execution is usually expressed by the terms to be put to death. And cut off means to lose one's property or standing as a free citizen. And that's true. When we come to chapter 10, we're going to run into a couple of the priests who brought the wrong kind of fire, and they were put to death. But the term is that they died, not that they were cut off. So cut off from his people is probably losing your standing as an Israelite or to lose your property. And as Word finally puts it in the last part of this comment, it says, thus the phraseology depicts one of the worst fates for a person who's been a member of the covenant community. It isn't something that you want to have. You don't want to be cut off from the nation of Israel. And that would happen if you came into the place of worship unclean. God was serious about that. Just like he told Moses, take off your shoes, you're standing on holy ground. Okay, verse number 22, and we're winding down here now. These are instructions now that goes beyond just the priests, but also for the children of Israel as well. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the children of Israel. So they're included in this as well, not just the priests. Saying, you shall not eat any fat of ox or sheep or goat. Now this is within the context of the sacrifice, the sacrifices that would be made. Verse 23, or 24. And the fat of any animal that dies naturally, and the fat of what is torn by wild beasts, may be used in any other way, but you shall by no means eat it. So God is saying that the fat of any animal that dies by naturally or is killed by another wild beast, you could use it perhaps for fuel for lighting or grease or something, some other way. That's what he's saying in verse number 24. Then we get to the crux of it in verse 25. For whoever eats the fat of the animal, of which men offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, the person who eats it shall be cut off from his people. So God is defining it here that the fat portion of the offering of the sacrifice is dedicated to him. You're not to eat it. And going back to chapter 3, he gave specific instructions on what fat. You know, the fat of the entrails, the intestines, the fat of the lobe of the kidney. Those are dedicated to God, and you are not to eat that. That's what verse 25 is telling us. Tyndale commentary. In general Hebrew thought, the fat portions of the sacrifice comprised the choice sections, and therefore appropriated to God alone. Although all things belong to God ultimately, his relationship with the believer demands that the latter assign to God a certain portion of those material things with which he has been entrusted. The principle of returning God a portion of what he has bestowed was formalized in the system of tithing. So that's saying that we give to God in the system of tithing. That's the way God has given to us. God has ordained us to give in the system of tithing. Here, in this sacrifice, the fat portions were to be burnt and dedicated to God. Verse 26. Moreover, you shall not eat any blood in any of your dwellings, whether bird or beast. Whoever eats any blood, that person shall be cut off from his people. So we're seeing here the prohibition against eating meat which has not been drained of the blood is repeated from chapter 3, verse 17, which we read earlier in another Bible study, Leviticus 3:17. This shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations. In all your dwellings, you shall eat neither fat nor blood. And Barnes notes, the prohibition to eat blood is repeated 7 times in the Pentateuch. In Leviticus chapter 17, verses 10 through 14, 2 distinct grounds are given. First, its own nature as a vital fluid, and secondly, its consecration and sacrificial worship. So we're not to eat blood, first of all, because it's vital fluid of our bodies, and secondly, because it's used in sacrificial worship. Verses 28 through 34 is talking about the priest's share of the fellowship offering. Again, this was the family Thanksgiving celebration, and the priest's portions are more specifically defined in this section. Verse 28, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, he who offers the sacrifice of his peace offering to the Lord shall bring his offering to the Lord from the sacrifice of his peace offering, that thanksgiving offering that would be offered. Verse 30, his own hands shall bring the offerings made by fire to the Lord. The fat with the breast he shall bring, that the breast may be waved as a wave offering before the Lord. Okay, let's talk about verses 29 through 30. This is from Understanding the Bible Commentary. It says this, part of the offering is burnt on the altar. The worshiper takes clear responsibility by bringing the holy portion to God as a wave offering. The fat is burned, but the breast goes to the priest. So of that Thanksgiving offering where the family could get involved, the worshiper had to make sure that the fat was burned, dedicated to God on the altar. Then he would take the breast of that offering, make sure that went to the priest to eat. Well, as a wave offering, dedicated to God, and then he would eat it. Verse 30, we see the phrase wave offering. Tyndale Commentary. The act of waving as the offering was presented most probably involved the priest extending the portion in the general direction of the altar and then withdrawing it as a gesture of dedication. So he would take that breast and wave it before the fire, waving it towards God, dedicating it to him, then bring it back to the priest as his portion to eat. That's what that's talking about. Verse 31. And the priest shall burn the fat on the altar, but the breast shall be Aaron and his sons. So, fat burnt on the altar, dedicated to God, the breast portion is eaten by the priests. Verse 32, and the right thigh you shall give to the priest as a heave offering from the sacrifices of your peace offerings. He among the sons of Aaron, who offers the blood of the peace offering and the fat, shall have the right thigh for his part. Now a question came up in one of the other congregations that apparently in the old King James, instead of right thigh, it says shoulder. If you're reading in the old King James. And actually, from the Hebrew, it is the lower leg or the thigh. So our old King, the King James translators translated it in the old King James as shoulder, but the new King James has it right, it's the thigh. Verse 34, for the breast of the wave offering and the thigh of the heave offering I have taken from the children of Israel, from the sacrifices of their peace offerings, and I have given them to Aaron and to the priest and to his sons from the children of Israel by a statute forever. So, as we've talked about, the majority of the offering from this peace thanksgiving offering went to the offerer, the worshiper and his family, but as verse 34 points out, the breast and the thigh, God says, I've given to Aaron and the priests and his sons. The Bible Knowledge Commentary. As with other offerings, except for the burnt offering, the priest received designated portions for food. So there would be no dispute. You got all this meat to be dealt with. God set the portions of who gets what. And there's a lot of material here, but it served well in those ancient times when they had all of these sacrifices going. Another comment from Understanding the Bible Commentary, it says this. The fact that certain portions goes to the priests indicates that the priests have a means of living. In fact, these regulations put the priests in a much favored status. These portions come to the priest regularly. They had to do a lot of work. I mean, they were constantly, with these sacrifices involved, they were working in service to God. So they had to have, be taken care of. And that's what all these portions spelled out for them. Now we're coming to, we're winding down here now, chapter 7, verse 35, excuse me. This is the consecrated portion for Aaron and his sons from the offerings made by fire to the Lord on the day when Moses presented them to minister to the Lord as priests. That's going to happen in chapter 8, verse 36. The Lord commanded that this be given to them by the children of Israel on the day that he anointed them. Again, chapter 8 is when they will be anointed as priests. By a statute forever throughout their generations. Verse, Bible Knowledge Commentary, talking about verses 35 and 6, it says, the summary of the priest's share of the offerings immediately after their installation into priestly service. The priests began to receive their regular share for the generations to come. So after they get ordained as priests, begin the sacrifices, then they get their portions on a regular basis. Now we come to the last two verses in chapter 7, which is a summary statement of all the sacrificial laws that we've talked about in chapters 1 through 7 thus far. Here's a comment from the Jewish Study Bible. It says this: a summary of chapters 1 through 7, closing the account of what was communicated to Moses on the first day of Nisan. And that was when God's presence entered the tabernacle. And I've stressed this many times throughout these Bible studies, that all that we've read in chapters 1 through 7 was one long speech from God the day that his presence entered the tabernacle about all these instructions about the sacrifices. Verse 37. This is the law of the burnt offering, the grain offering, the sin offering, the trespass offering, and the consecrations and the sacrifice of the peace offering. Those five sacrifices that are covered in those chapters. Verse 38, which the Lord commanded Moses on Mount Sinai, on the day when he commanded the children of Israel to offer their offerings to the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai. So that ends all of these instructions about the five types of sacrifice, who gets the meat, what portions are to be sacrificed, etc. One more comment from Word Commentary. It says this: this summary, verses 37 and 38, ties chapters 1 through 7 into Exodus 29 through 40, which was the instructions about building the tabernacle. And it points forward to Leviticus 9, when the sacrifices would actually begin. The design of this concluding formula is not to contradict chapter 1, verse 1, in which Moses receives the revelation from the tent of meeting, but to tie chapters 1 through 7 into the larger corpus of Exodus 25 through Numbers 10. That's talking about all that time that they were at Sinai. It won't be until Numbers 10 when they leave Mount Sinai and begin their march towards the land of Canaan. And all during this time, they're at the base of Mount Sinai receiving these instructions. That's what this is saying. So this ends the instructions regarding the sacrifices. When we come to the next Bible study, we're actually going to come where the priests get anointed to be priests. And then in chapter 9, they begin the sacrifices, to actually begin to sacrificing the animals. That's what we'll cover the next time. But before we leave, I'll give you some lessons as I usually do. First of all, one of the symbolisms of the perpetual fire is that it represented God's eternal presence with his people and them worshiping him continually. A lesson for us as disciples, we must keep the divine fire burning in us. As it's put in 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 16, do not quench the Spirit. And we do that by keeping close to God in our communication with him, in our prayer life, in our study, keeping that fire burning within us. Also, the instructions given to the priests who then gave them to the worshipers, were expected to be carried out by God in detail and obedience. You know, we've gone through a lot of instructions, very detailed instructions from God. And he expected those to be carried out. What does that mean for us as a lesson? Hebrews 12, verses 28 through 29. Let us offer to God acceptable worship with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. We are to continue on with our worship on a daily basis to our great God. That brings us to the end of this section of Scripture in Leviticus today.